Jim Bell Reel 2.
The officers was billeted in the public house in the middle of the village. I'm trying to think of the name of it, it won't come to me at the minute. We used to go down there quite regular. Captain Sims, I do recall, was there with his wife at the Three Salmons was the public house. Also, there was another one about the opposite way called the Greyhound, where the officers was billeted. But there was, as I say, it was a territorial regiment. It was known as the 132nd Field Regiment, with Welsh in brackets at the end. But the it took a good year, I suppose, to sort everything out, because there was forever movement going on. And eventually all these old people that had been in the territorial unit were moved on to elsewhere or put onto jobs that suited them, because no way could you take a 74-year-old man overseas. And then, of course, the militia started coming in. And what I hadn't known at that time was that Seacombe suddenly appeared, the famous Sir Harry Seacombe, that eventually when he died. But he was a great asset, entertaining us, because he had this way with him. What we didn't know in the start was that him and his sister used to do an act in the Swansea musicals. But he had one of his famous acts was taking off Hitler, and he used to have a broken black piece of comb which he'd hold up here, and he could rattle away in German. Now whether it was German, I don't know, but and his face would become flushed, and he had these glasses for wearing a gas mask, this little steel rim, and of course he used to have us in fits for hours and hours. And also I recall we was always up to some tricks or other, but yes, on several occasions we used to be hungry, and we eventually found out where the meat store was, and we found that whoever had put the hasp and staple on had put them so as it was exposed, not so as it folded over, so we promptly bought a screwdriver and we used to go down and cut meat off on the quiet. And I occupied what they called a warder's room, which was about six of us, but had a nice big fireplace. So we used to grill or toast steaks and bits of meat and God knows what. Also,
did you get caught?
No. Later on, I don't know whether, yeah, it must have been the Christmas of 39. I didn't want to go home, so I stayed there, and I worked with a civilian engineer who used to pump all the sewage out in the prison off a single cylinder gas pump. Oh, sometimes it was an absolute beast, it just would not start, but other times it was fine. Anyway, Christmas Eve, I found all his keys laying on the table, and he'd always told me, if ever I leave my keys, you bring them down. And he told me, apparently he had one of the pubs in the village. Of course, I went down Christmas Eve, and I think it was the day after Boxing Day when I got back. They got me so drunk, I just didn't know. And yeah, I got caught then, because I was marched in under escort for allowing the radiators to go. Oh, sorry, that was the other job, was looking after the radiators, the boilers in the ground underneath the cells. And of course, all over Christmas, everybody was complaining because there was coal, but I remember saying to the major when I was giving me evidence that, asked him, which pipe did you feel? He said, the bottom one. I said, oh yeah, well that's a return pipe, it would be cold. He said, nice try, Bell, but you didn't get away with it. So I had 7 days CB for that, but they let me go.
So what did the CBs consist of?
Confined to barracks.
Ah.
And they then they decided that as I was qualified to teach people how to drive, that the hours in the evening when I should have been going out, I was allowed to teach the sergeants how to drive, which was quite nice, as we used to say in the army, cushy number. yes, it was quite good. And as I say, we had Seacombe there to entertain us. He was great fun. And then we went from there to Maresfield, which was right out on the, as we say, right out in the sticks behind Brighton somewhere. There was several brick buildings which reminded me it might have been a barracks or something, so, or might have been a TA place for weekends.
And which unit were you attached to then?
I was still with the 132nd.
And when would this have been approximately?
Oh, it was would be possibly June time.
June 1940?
Yeah.
And what were your duties there?
I was just a driver, you know, I used to do driving instruction, and I used to drive the Passion Wagon with the sergeants driving, teaching them to drive. So, you know, I was the... from there we went to Brighton, to Preston Park, which is as you enter the north side of Brighton. The guns was all down the park track under the trees, and we was billeted in the civilian houses on the opposite side. We was there for about 3 months or so, and eventually we went to Milburn Port. And again, there was all these wooden huts. Now, whether they'd been put up there for us or not, I don't know, but it was about a mile and a half out of the village of Milburn Port, and I think Sherborne was about 3 miles away. And after a few months, we then went to Warden Hill under canvas, and that is the main road from Yeovil to Dorchester, and it's about 4 miles south of Dorchester. It was under canvas there. I recall we had I'd taken a man under escort, and he'd committed some offence, so they shipped him out Middle East. I took him to Nottingham, and I lost him on the train. The train was so packed, it took me, we was the other side of Leicester for a fact, and he was sitting there, so what's name, and he had £100 in his pocket, you know, so he could have done a bucket. Anyway, I got back to Maresfield, Warden Hill, apologies. That night there was a massive gale, and they woke me up and said, come along, the sergeant, the officer's mess has blown down, you've got to help them. I was quite rude to them, so I used some pretty filthy language, and again I was on report again. But when they listened to my story, and I realised I'd walked from Yeovil to Warden Hill, which is about 10 miles, just to get back at midnight and be tipped out at 1 o'clock, they understood the reason for my bad temper. But yes, that was quite good. I then...
When did this take you up to?
I would think it was the beginning of 42, because for a long time I'd been experiencing trouble losing my voice, and if I smoked cheap cigarettes like Woodbines or anything, it was terrible throats and everything. And I don't remember how, but I finished up in a hospital which was called Guy's Marsh, which in later years became a borstal. The thing I do remember about the hospital, I was in Ward 18, so there must have been a hell of a lot of wards. They operated on, took my tonsils and adenoids away, and did something to my throat. And eventually they shipped me to somewhere in Devon or somewhere, because it was a convalescent home. And all I lived on was strawberries and cream. God, was I fed up with strawberries and cream. I never had them for years and years afterwards. And then in the June or July, they came to the convalescent home and said, we're moving to Scotland. Do you feel up to it? I said, well, I couldn't ride a motorbike. Oh, no, he said, we don't mind that. So I made a bed up in a gun tractor. And they took me from Warden Hill to Dunblane. They made a bed up in a gun tractor. I think it took 2 or 3 days to get there, you know, driving in convoy, obviously. And we got to Dunblane, and we was billeted in Colonel Stirling's residence. There was a Nissen hut, I recall, in his gar in the lawns, because it was massive lawns. And it was there when I began to get better and feel better. The officer sent for me. I think it was Ted Catamull, I won't be sure. He came from Hayward's Heath. And he said, I want you to drive some wooden stakes in on the field. I said, yeah. He said, put ropes around it. He said, get your drivers to reverse in there. And when they're a bit confident with the vehicle, make them get the gun in there as well. What crap, harebrained, bloody scheme this. Of course, later on, I was to realise the exact measurements that we put these stakes in was the size of the LST that we landed in Algiers. But, I mean, in those days, they told you nothing. And we spent this awful long time backing in and backing out and driving. And
how many drivers were you in charge of?
I think there was about... Let me see, I used to have 10 wagons in each troop, so that's 20. and there would be two ammunition numbers to each. That's possibly 30, 40 men. There was half a dozen long wheelbase three tonners. They were mostly Bedfords with the bull nose, and they could be used as a gun tractor as well if the ground was suitable. I mean, but being long wheelbase, that was pretty useless on it. Anything a bit damp. But we taught, and we used to have in each three tonner was 200 rounds of 25 pounder shells, plus the corresponding cartridges to go with them. And the other job I eventually had when we got abroad was supplying the rations and petrol and everything. You know, it was very interesting.
Were you still a private at this time?
No, I was a. I missed out. I was in Waterloo Barracks in Aldershot, and it was there that I took my what they used to call cadre classes to get my first stripe.
When was this?
This was between
So after you left Usk prison, you went to.
I think that was when we went to Aldershot. Mm-hmm.
And you took some exams, did you?
Yes, and they used to have classes on the square. In the morning, it was my turn to be passed out as I qualified to lay a gun. There was four of us, and out of the blue, the fog came down, whop. And so we could hear the orders being shouted. We couldn't see who was shouting them, but we did it. And they come along, each one, yes, yes, you're right, yes, yes. And later on in the day, when the fog lifted, I looked, there were three guns pointing that way, and mine was that way. God knows what, but I passed. So I had my first stripe at Aldershot. I don't know where I got my second stripe. I honestly don't. Anyway, when eventually.
So in the artillery, does that make you a lance corporal or. Lance bombardier.
Yes. And then I, somewhere along the line, I acquired a second stripe. Oh, yes, I remember that. Where was I? I was at Brighton. Oh, yes.
At Preston Park?
Yes, yes. And I was called up and told I'd got my second chevron, which I was then a bombardier. And my mate, Hadrian Pierce, and two others, I can't remember the names, we got on the rounds. We decided, oh, that's right, I was going on leave, and they told me I was now a bombardier. So we got on the drinking at Brighton. Then we went to London, we got more drinking. Then we bumped into a sergeant in the police who took us to his club. And boy, did I get pie-eyed. The next thing I remember, I'm in a cell, and a CMP came in and said, come on out here and scrub your cell. I said, you go, that's stuffed. I've got two stripes, you've got one, shut your rattle. I said, where the hell am I? He said, you're in New Scotland Yard. I said, what? Stop joking. I said, I'm in no fit state. My head was. And it turned out I was in New Scotland Yard, and I got marched in front of the RSM, and he rattled off at me for being drunk. And eventually I found out apparently we'd staggered into the underground and got in on one of the bunks where the people went to avoid being bombed, and they fetched the police to us. And so, of course, we were whipped. I've no memory of it. But eventually when I got back to barracks, you know, the usual remarks were, hey, Digger, there's a copper following you down the road. You know, just all the ribald. Anyway, I got in front of the old man and told him all about it, and he said he laughed. And he first of all dismissed it and said nothing. And he got an order from head office that I had to be punished, so I got another set of CB, because he said what I put on was, he said we ought to give them a medal, not punish them. But he was, I can't think who the major was, he had. I was to run into him a bit later on, at the end of war. He was quite a gentleman, really. But that will come later. I must try and remember that. We went, after all these mad escapades, and as I say, we went to Dunblane, and we kept going off onto route marches, and we was equipping, making sure all the vehicles had the correct number of spanners and tyres and all that rubbish. Meant frequent journeys to Glasgow to the ordnance there to pick up whatever I wanted. And we kept being taken away on route march and saying, yatch is your lot, you're going. This happened and this happened. And then all of a sudden I went down with food poisoning, and this was towards the end of October, 1942, would it be? Yes. And I finished up in a hospital called in Blair Drummond. The lady Drummond apparently was a Romanian, they said. It was a massive place, and it was in there that I learned that the second, or the what was then the second front, and our regiment had landed in Algiers. Well, of course, there was me laying in hospital. But as luck happens, I was allocated to what they called the third wave. So eventually, in the end of December that year, the I was fit enough to travel. So I went away again on one of these route marches, and yeah, we finished up in Port of Glasgow and onto the Greek boat, the Nee Hellas. They took us. It took 10 days. I think that was the 20th of December. It took 10 days to get to Algiers, but we was lucky because we landed in the dock, you know, as a boat should do. Whereas the others went down the gangplank and waterproofed.
Because you'd been parted from your colleagues, were you attached to another regiment or?
No. It was just. It was still. As soon as we got to Algiers, the only place they could billet us, we slept on the seats in the grandstand and the racecourse. You know, the wooden slats, it was bloody awful there. And we had nice bread, egg and bacon for breakfast on the boat. And when we got dinner that day was corned beef and biscuits, which was quite a hell of a shock.
Did you come down in convoy?
Yes, it was in convoy. There's quite a few of us, and I recall several times there was suspected submarines about, and as we were sleeping down below the waterline, when they dropped death charges, they used to sound like thunder going up the boat. That was frightening.
Were you seasick?
No, never been. Tell a lie, once I've been seasick in all my life, even I was on that last storm coming across the channel. Never bothered. I went to sleep in the middle of it.
Did you go through the Mediterranean, or did you go...
To Algiers, yeah, you only just touched the Mediterranean. But later on, I went on a trooper over the Mediterranean. It was there, it was in Afro... Oh, that's right, we was going back from Taranto to Port Said, allegedly, to go and be part of the Second Front in France. But they tell us we kicked up such a trouble and was such a bloody nuisance, they sent us back again. But going across to Port Said, there was such a storm, and I recall one morning I was with a gang of men fetching the breakfast down, and the man behind me got a massive tray of sausages in thick brown gravy, and he slipped, of course a lot went all over the floor, and the men was being sick all over the place, and eventually the major said, "You're the only NCO that's not seasick, but we're going to get the heads cleaned." Oh, what a mess. And I got up on top after cleaning them. I thought, oh, God, that's about the worst job in my life. And I turned to speak to the man next to me, and he vomited all over me. And that I was sick the first time and only time. Touch wood. But,
so when you were in Algiers...
Oh, it was a bloody nuisance.
What were your duties there?
Basically, getting all the vehicles off the boat, and sorting them out, because it seemed uncanny, the WOGs, as we called them then, seemed to know which truck had got which in, and they'd drop it on the edge of the boat and tip it all on the deck, you know, and they'd lose the lot, the rations, and Christ knows what, there'd be sugar and tea and everything spilling on the docks, and people appearing from nowhere, you know, and scooping up the stuff. Yes, it took quite a while, at least 3 weeks, I think, to do all that and get all the repairs done as well, you know, the damage the boat, the lorries. And eventually, after about 3 weeks, we decided that we would join up with the regiment for the first time. And we went in convoy up to a place called Bija. And there we met the regiment, and later, it was in darkness, we had to go in because I was in action. And I met my man who was going to be, he was my officer all the way through, was Peter Wood from Harpenden. He was a solicitor. And he came to me and said, "Bell, you're improperly dressed." I said, "I beg your pardon." He said, "You're improperly dressed." I said, "Yeah." He He said, "You're a Lance Sergeant now, not a bombardier." So I said, "Get another stripe put up." It was quite a pleasant surprise. But he was a smashing man. He had absolutely no fear, no nerves, no nothing. And I remember once we were Strathen, and I'd run across two fields to get out of the way, and he was still sitting on top of the drunk. And when I got back to him, irritated Bell, isn't it? I thought, how can a man be so calm? But he was a smashing man. I mean, he wanted you to do the work and everything. Well, you had to do your work, isn't it? But if he knew there was going to be a lull on several occasions, he would say, "There's nothing going to happen for 4 days, Belgium. Find somewhere back and have a few days off." And I'd slope off and have 4 days off.
Where did you go?
Well, to the next village and such like. And I know, I think Castle del Rio was one place in Italy where I went back to a little farmhouse I'd found and stayed there for a week. And there was... I lived as them, you know. We used to have this awful red wine, grapes and walnuts for breakfast. Oh, and toasted, a thing I never knew then, but I do know it. It was a maize cake, which was toasted. Yes, and the another time when we was in, I used to give an old Arab all the dried tea leaves from the kitchen. And every so often he'd bring me this bowl of golden grains with grilled kid on top. The grains, I could only take about a teaspoon. They was that hot. I now know that was harissa in couscous. But the grilled kid, it was out of this world. There's nothing nicer than grilled kid. Preferably boys, not girls. Yeah, no, they're all joking on one side. I'm wandering a bit, I'm sorry.
Right, so you're in Algiers.
In Algiers, and then we went to Bija, and we joined the regiment. That was the first time I'd met the regiment again, but as I say, and I was informed I was a Lance Sergeant, so from then on...
Had your duties changed by being a Lance Sergeant?
No, I then supplied the whole battery with whatever they needed, i.e. ammunition, petrol, food, because in them days we was on compo rations, you know, the 14-day man rations. And it meant working all night, basically, because you couldn't go up at the guns in daylight because of being letting the Germans know where we were. So all my work was night work, driving without lights. Then they hit on the idea of this little tiny white light on a diff. They painted a circle on your diff. But they were, to me, they were a nuisance because after a while you was doing this, you know, as it bumped up and down. I found it much easier if they switched them off. I had complete darkness. We went from there to Udzaga, how I recall, and I went up before the guns got there with Peter Wood, and he said there'll be four here and four there, so many hundred rounds of ammunition dumped at these places, which I did. And then the Peter Wood said to me, "Oh, they're starting at midnight with a barrage from their guns." So he said, "I think we could pop up and have a look at it." I said, "Yeah, that's a good idea." So he always sat on the back of the motorbike. I always went everywhere on a motorbike, really.
What sort of motorbike was it?
I think this... this day it was a Matchless. And we poodled up to the guns, as we thought, which was well before midnight, and I got separated from Peter Woods, and the next thing I know was this God almighty bang. And whether the barrage started early, I don't know, but I walked into a gun which had laid me flat. And the next thing I remember, I was in the command post, and they was patting my cheeks and wiping me and such like, and pouring neat rum into me. What no one had told either of us was that while we'd been away, they'd put a six-inch gun either side of our 4 25-pounders, and that's what I walked into. So they never killed me, I'll never know. So I wonder now if that's how my deafness started. Could have been. But although the specialist said it was 25-pounder damage that caused me all the trouble, which, what's now. From there...
Did you find that spectacle of the guns going off? How did you think about, what did you feel about that?
Never used to bother me, it's just something that happened.
How far away were you from the German lines then?
Oh, quite, they used to call us long-range snipers. Quite often, a mile at least, you know. That's what never appealed to me. The only thing that never appealed to me being in the service was being a, because they said, "Bell, you want promotion, you'll have to take over a gun." No, I'm quite happy as a Lance Sergeant doing what I'm doing. I said, I love transport. I could pull an engine to bits and rebuild. The only thing I never touched was gearboxes or differentials, but engines or take pistons out and everything. I did it right till 1970, even in Civvy Street, and rebuilt engines. But yeah, I love my vehicles. My first love was a motorbike, because I had a motorbike until I was 60 here. I used to go to work on my bog wheel, as we called it. But from Medjez, we put down this barrage in front of Udzaga. That was north of Udzaga. Longstop Hill, I recall, was on my left. And Taborba was in front of that, where apparently the regiment got an awful maul in. That was before I got out there, so I didn't... Actually, one of the sergeants said, Dinger, I'm glad you wasn't here at the start. He said, we took an awful maul in at Taborba. He said, and I'm pleased you wasn't here. And I thought it was quite nice, you know, to be so nice. But from Medjez, we went slightly east and sat behind what was known to us as Gubalat Plain. And you could see there was like a range of hills half a mile away. The guns was in between my wagon lines, which we called French Farm, and then the guns, and then the North Ants. Yes, right, North Ants and the Lancs were the other side. Somehow or other, our command, our forward OP, used to go out with a captain and one of my drivers and a Bren gun carrier, and one morning they went out there and the North Ants had taken the mines out of the road, so as transport, and they'd stacked them on the side of the road, but no one had taken the fuses out of them, and my driver hit this, chopped both his legs off, and I think the captain was killed. Of course, the next day when they wanted a forward OP, nobody could drive a Bren gun carrier, so of course Joe got detailed. And as we went over this spot where the accident happened, this God almighty bang at the behind me and blast went up the back of my head. The next thing I remember is the officer with me was thumping out at me and saying, Dinger, for Christ's sake, stop. I said, I'm dead. He said, you bloody fool, you're not. And when we stopped and went back and looked, it was the detonator of the mine had been left on the roadside and I'd hit that. And when we checked it, it had cracked six links in me carrier, so I thought, oh well, it'll be all right. Anyway, we got up into no man's land, and down me, the track split. And I went to replace the track, and somebody had taken all the tools out. So I tried all tricks to do it, and eventually I chucked the other track off, so I got no tracks on. I was in no man's land, which was quite hairy at the time. But anyway, in the middle of the night, one of our drivers was detailed, and he came up with a Morris tractor, and with the aid of a winch wire and a set of tools, we quickly put the tracks back on and skiddy-addled back. I was very pleased when that was over, I can assure you. It was quite hairy at the minute. One thing I do recall is the officer saying, look, see that tank out there knocked out? I said, yeah. Now you watch it for a few minutes, and of course we watched it, and the turret moved. And there was the jury was using that as a forward observation post, which was quite, I mean, they were extremely clever. There's no two ways about it.
Did you see much of their equipment that had been left behind?
Yes, and also on that Gubalat Plain, eventually they broke out, and I watched them dig and put a machine gun up on the hill. I could see him with binoculars quite clear. And eventually, the gunners told me afterwards that they were shooting on open sights, i.e. from the gun straight to the machine gun nest. And they followed a battle for 3 days and three nights. God, it was quite right. You could light a cigarette off the gun barrels, that was red hot. And the last night, as we were so pushed, I'd been driving the same as I was doing what the drivers were doing. I was driving a three-tonner. But I suddenly found I had night blindness, and I was just on the outskirts of Medjez El Bab when the wagon lines and the guns was about 3 miles. And the only way we got in, I suddenly thought of an idea. I thought, well, I can't see. So I got one of the ammunition numbers to walk on the edge of the road with his arm extracted and his what's named touching my shoulder. and each time when his arm disappeared off my shoulder, I pulled him to the side again. And eventually it took a hell of a long time, but I got in. I then crashed out. There was a hayrick right near me. I just crashed out in the hayrick, and it was 24 hours before I woke up again. I was really out for the count of it. And then everything seemed to go a lot easier. We had this long run up to Tabor, not Tabor, but to Tunis, Longstock being on our left, and we was up on the main highway. There was an awful lot of our tanks, Churchill tanks, knocked out on that road, I recall. And eventually, after a lot of Tunis fell.
Who are your battery sort of attached to?
It was the 132nd Field Regiment.
Yeah.
They had two batteries, three batteries.
So did you have infantry
We had the Lancashire Fusiliers, North Ants.